Good to see everybody. Thanks for being here. Okay, we're going to be in Joel today. And just a couple things. There's several things in the Middle East that are going on. And I just want to remind for people that may be new here, because I've been doing these Mideast updates now for like a year and a half, because it is just fascinating seeing what all is going on in North Africa and all the Muslim countries, and how it affects Israel especially. But as we're reading Joel, and you see these events happening, you see all of these similarities that are going on, and to me, it is those things that makes the Bible alive and real. And whenever you compare the things in Joel with, is God giving the United States a warning? You know, I can't deny that. So I just want you to know the reasons that I'm doing these things and we go through this is because I believe that the Bible is alive today and applicable today as it ever has been. And the more we know about the prophecies and the history of the Old Testament and the Jewish faith and all of these things, it helps us to understand our faith better. It helps us to understand the New Testament better. It is right here in our face. It's happening right in front of us. This week in Libya, I don't know if you saw this, that the portions of the Libyan public actually rose up and attacked the supposed militant group that had killed our ambassador. So there's a great number of people, like in all these countries, that are upset with these militant groups. Now then, the thing that, you know, we got to kind of watch and see is, you know, who's going to win at the end of all of this? Well, it's going to be the people with the most weapons, and it's not the general public. And that's the dangerous part. So it's still a very tense situation, even in Libya. But I was pretty impressed that somebody took the nerve to attack this militant compound. That was interesting. Now then, the flip side of this is that Pakistan dedicated Friday to Show Your Love Day, and this was Show Your Love for the Prophet Muhammad Day. And so what they were hoping to do was to have peaceful protests after Friday noon prayers. Well, 19 people wound up getting killed, so that didn't work out quite so well, showing your love for Muhammad Day.
Relatively peaceful.
Well, yeah, there's only 19 people got killed. Again, like I said last week, there's some kind of disconnect going on whenever a group of people comes out of their Friday noon prayers and begins violence. There's something not happening right. There was also a terrorist attack at the Israeli-Egyptian border, where one Israeli soldier was killed and three of the militants were killed by Israelis. And so this is a constant tension point between Egypt and Israel. Egypt is wanting to put more military in the Sinai to combat these militants. Israel is very unsure about the presence of Egypt's military in the Sinai after the Six-Day War in 1967. They're keeping a close eye on all of that. And then to have a cross-border conflict gunfight, that kind of keeps things very tense. Now then, the reason that the militants said that they attacked these Israeli soldiers was because of the anti-Islam film that was supposedly the impetus behind all these other protests. Now you're thinking, okay, now, again, like I said last week, if it is the American anti-Islam film, then why are they attacking the Israelis? And the reason for that, one of the reasons is, Ahmadinejad, the head of the president of Iran, came out in a statement and said that it was the Jews that produced that film. So again, everything is pointing toward the Jews and the hatred of the Jews and all of this, and so these militants in the Sinai attacked the Israelis because, well, they must have had something to do with the film. They didn't have anything to do with the film. So again, this is not about a film. It's just not. Then, and we keep allowing Mahmoud Ahmadinejad to come into the United States and address the United Nations every single year. The State Department did disallow about 20 of his entourage visas, which I was impressed that they disallowed anybody, but they disallowed the wrong person, I think. But he is addressing the United Nations, but hopefully this will be his last time because his presidential term is up this next year, and so hopefully he won't be back. The other interesting thing is Tuesday evening at sundown is the Jewish holy day of Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. It goes from sundown Tuesday to sundown Wednesday, the most mournfully observant day on the Jewish calendar. This is, like I say, their Day of Atonement. And it's sad that Ahmadinejad is addressing the United Nations on that day, on Wednesday. So I'm sure he will have some anti-Israel rhetoric. If you can get a hold of his speech, every speech that he's made, he has called for the coming of the Islamic Messiah, the Mahdi. It will probably be there. And I'm just wondering, since he doesn't, if he knows he's not coming back next year, what is he going to say this year? You know, it's like he may have no holes barred on his speech this year. Okay, so Ahmadinejad on Wednesday. Mahmoud Abbas, the head of the Palestinians, he and Benjamin Netanyahu both address the United Nations on Thursday. So that people are supposing that Abbas will still continue to press for a Palestinian state, a unilateral declaration in front of the General Assembly. Don't know if that'll happen or not. If it does, that's just one more piece of turmoil. Okay, and then the last thing is that, no, Jesus did not have a wife. So. And this is something else that comes up that we need to know about. We need to understand it. And if you weren't here when we did our lesson, the Bible, can you believe it? We went back through history and showed how the Bible came about and how it has been transmitted accurately throughout history. So one thing you need to keep in mind, this document that they are saying that shows that Jesus had a wife, as well as several other apocryphal books of the New Testament, they all came in the 3rd, 4th centuries. They came much later than the time of Christ, okay? Now then, just because they came later doesn't necessarily mean that they're wrong, okay? So we got to be careful just pointing to something that comes later and saying, well, we disallow that. But the thing that you have to remember is that part of the validity that we have for today, the proof of the New Testament, is that we have 3 centuries or more of the early church fathers' letters and writings that began at the time of the apostles and continued for 500 years. And these are all of the people writing letters who began the church. They got the messages from Jesus to the apostles to the early church fathers, and that was the continuity that began in those first centuries and how the church came about. Not one time in any of those early church father letters is Jesus described as being married. Okay? So you take the evidence of the New Testament that says that Jesus wasn't married, and you add that with all the evidence of all the early church fathers, some who had contact with the apostles, and the fact that for centuries none of them ever wrote about Jesus' marriage, okay? So then you take what is found in the 3rd or 4th century, and you have to naturally assume that it's a fake, all right? And all of the other books that have been found that came later, they've all been determined that just doesn't measure up. Okay, so that's the evidence that we have for our scripture. And I don't know. We'll kind of see what happens. That probably it will kind of just fade away like most of the other things. Okay, and Joel, we have been talking about in chapter 1, this invasion of locusts. And looked at 2 or 3 things last week because one of the questions that comes up, is this an actual invasion of locusts in the time of Joel that he is writing about, or is it a symbolism of an army that is happening? And so I showed you different things in the Bible from Deuteronomy, where God told the nation of Israel before he brought them into the promised land that if they rebelled against him, that he would send a plague of locusts upon the land. So that kind of fits in with an actual event. Then you have Joel somewhere around 600 BC. John in the book of Revelation says that in the future there's also a particular invasion of locusts coming that is they're really terrible locusts with scorpion stings, but some of the descriptions that he uses in Revelation coincide with what Joel says in the book of Joel about these locusts. It keeps adding up to that this is probably an actual invasion of locusts, an actual plague of locusts. And it talks about how it's all destruction. No food is left behind the locusts. The land is desolate. There's not even enough for the people to give offerings in the temple, grain or drink offerings in the temple, because it's all wiped out. They're using the food for themselves. If they're keeping the food for themselves, then the priests are going hungry. And that's what he tells them is, priests, you need to start mourning because the food that was being brought by the people for the priests, it's not coming in. The priests are going to go hungry. So it's a time of desolation, wildfires, drought. Sounds a whole lot like what's going on in the United States today, and pretty interesting to look at it that way. And the last thing that we looked at was how often God refers to this as my land, my vines, my trees, this is my land, and he's going to judge the nations about how they divided his land several times in Joel. I'm going to show you a few more times today. God is very possessive of this land and this people. It doesn't make sense outside of biblical explanation. That's why people for centuries have been so against the Jews. They're saying, what are you so special about? What's so special about this land? That's why the Arabs want this land. The Muslims want this land because it has no tie to the Jews, they say. People look at the Jewish people throughout history and say, what is so special about them? Why are they chosen? And God told them up front, I'm not choosing you because you're anything special or you're more numerous, anything else. I'm choosing you so I can be an example to the world through you. Okay, now this is really going to come out here. I don't know if we'll get to it this week, certainly next week. All right, so where we left off last week was this mention of the day of the Lord. He says in Joel 1:15, he says, alas for that day, for the day of the Lord is near. It will come like destruction from the Almighty. So please turn back to Isaiah 13. This is what we read last week, Isaiah 13. And I want to show you several similarities throughout the Bible to this same description. And I want you to see what the day of the Lord looks like, especially to the Old Testament writers. And it's going to be important here in another chapter or so, because Peter, in his first sermon on the day of Pentecost, quotes some verses out of Joel about the day of the Lord. And there's something really interesting that goes on there. So what I want you to see out of Isaiah is an oracle. This is Isaiah 13:1, an oracle concerning Babylon that Isaiah son of Amoz saw. So again, these prophecies often are near-term fulfillments as well as long-term fulfillments. So we know that the near-term fulfillment of the prophecies in Isaiah were Babylon, the captivity of Babylon. And then the long-term fulfillment is somewhere out in the future because it wasn't completely fulfilled, as we'll see. So there must be something else coming, okay? Verse 2, raise a banner on a bare hilltop, shout to them, beckon to them to enter the gates of the nobles. I have commanded my holy ones. I have summoned my warriors to carry out my wrath, those who rejoice in my triumph. Listen, a noise on the mountains like that of a great multitude. Listen, an uproar among the kingdoms like nations massing together. The Lord Almighty is mustering an army for war. They have come from faraway lands, from the ends of the heavens, the Lord and the weapons of his wrath to destroy the whole country. So whenever the Jews were carried captive into Babylon, the land went into desolation and disuse. Then do we see a parallel later in history? We'll get back to that. Wail, for the day of the Lord is near. It will come like destruction from the Almighty. The exact description that Joel says, that the day of the Lord will come like a destruction from the Almighty. Because of this, all hands will go limp, every man's heart will melt, terror will seize them, pain and anguish will grip them, they will writhe like a woman in labor, they will look aghast at each other, their faces aflame. See, the day of the Lord is coming, a cruel day with wrath and fierce anger to make the land desolate and destroy the sinners within it. All right? So what's the feel about the day of the Lord so far? I don't want to be a part of that. I mean, cruel, wrathful, a day of fire, a day of destruction. The land will be desolate and all the sinners destroyed. Did that happen with the captivity of Babylon? Maybe partly, but not fully. So is there something else coming later that's going to be the complete fulfillment? The stars of heaven and their constellations will not show their light. The rising sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. Well, as far as we know, that didn't happen either. So is that some future event? Okay? I will punish the world for its evil. Well, he did something with Israel, but he's talking about punishing the whole world here for the evil. The wicked for their sins. I will put an end to the arrogance of the haughty, and it will humble the pride of the ruthless. So there's some things there that sound like maybe we're partially completed with the captivity of Babylon, but there's something far greater that he's talking about is an overall punishment, a worldwide punishment for evil, and the destruction of sinners. So there sounds like there's something else yet to be fulfilled. Turn to Ezekiel, so Isaiah, Jeremiah, Lamentations, Ezekiel 30. Ezekiel 30, just to see some of these similarities. Ezekiel is writing pretty much in the time of the captivity of Babylon, okay? Ezekiel 30, verse 1. See if you catch any similarities. The word of the Lord came to me, son of man, prophesy and say, this is what the sovereign Lord says. Wail and say, alas for that day. For the day is near, the day of the Lord is near. A day of clouds, a time of doom for who? The nations. Okay. Now this will keep coming up. Once again, pretty much every single time in the Old Testament that the nation is referred to, that's Israel. The nations is referred to as always the Gentile nations. All nations other than Israel. So what is this travail? Who is this travail coming on? The nations, those other than Israel. A sword will come against Egypt, and anguish will come upon Cush. When the slain fall in Egypt, her wealth will be carried away, and her foundations torn down. All right, so specifically God's saying there's a coming time where Egypt and Cush, which is modern-day Ethiopia, are going to have a judgment against them also. And it's going to be a day of darkness and these clouds. You see these similarities? There's something happening in the heavens that is going to be very prominent on the day of the Lord. All right? So again, can you point to Egypt and Ethiopia having that judgment yet? Well, you know, we know that Egypt was kind of taken out of power back in the, you know, distant history, but this complete thing, this whole destruction of a time of doom and the day of clouds, not sure if that's completed yet. All right, then let's go over to Zephaniah. And there's something here, it says a day of clouds, a time for doom. There's a description in Amos that the day of the Lord is a day of darkness and not of light. Okay, so that's going to come up again too. So this day of the Lord is a day of darkness, not of light. So turn to Zephaniah. So keep going to the right. And you'll go through Jonah, Micah, Nahum. Okay, some of those little small books. And then Habakkuk and then Zephaniah. I know some of these are hard to find in here. Go to your tabs. It's okay if you use tabs. Zephaniah 1:14. He says, the great day of the Lord is near, near and coming quickly. Listen, the cry on the day of the Lord will be bitter. the shouting of the warrior there. That day will be a day of wrath, a day of distress and anguish, a day of trouble and ruin. Here it is again, a day of darkness and gloom, a day of clouds and blackness, a day of trumpet. Remember that. Trumpet keeps coming up too on this day. A day of trumpet and battle cry against the fortified cities and against the corner towers. I will bring distress on the people, and they will walk like blind men because they have sinned against the Lord. Their blood will be poured out like dust and their entrails like filth. Neither their silver nor their gold will be able to save them on the day of the Lord's wrath. In the fire of his jealousy, the whole world will be consumed. For he will make a sudden end of all who live in the earth. Well, that hasn't happened. We know that there was a flood in the time of Noah that God destroyed the world, and he promised never to do it again with a flood. But evidently there's another time coming when he's going to judge against all humanity, he's going to punish all sin, and he's going to destroy everything by fire. And that day of the Lord is a day of wrath whenever he pours out his wrath against all evil. We've seen all the way through the Bible, and Jesus talks about it, we're going to see some more verses it talks about, there is a judgment day coming. That's why we as Christians believe there is a day coming where all evil will be acted against through God's wrath. His wrath will be poured out on the earth. His wrath, he has to judge evil at some point. So this is all pointing toward there's a time coming when this is all going to happen. Now, if you put that with 2 Peter 3, so all the way to the back of the Bible, 2 Peter 3:10. Okay, so in Zephaniah, he says that the whole world will be consumed. It will be in the fire of his jealousy. He'll make a sudden end of all who live in the earth. 2 Peter 3:10 says, but the day of the Lord will come like a thief. The heavens will disappear with a roar. The elements will be destroyed how? Well, by fire. And the earth and everything in it will be laid bare. There it is. Sounds familiar. And so here through several centuries, from Joel to the Ezekiel to Zephaniah, all the way to Peter, his writings in the first century, there's all these similarities about this day of the Lord, and it doesn't sound very good. It just doesn't sound like any fun at all. You don't want to be there. You don't want to be a part of it. Okay? Now then, how do the Jews see this? Because it's important to see both sides, and it helps me to understand. The Jews, in fact, today, let's see, it is. It's today and about this time right here, because it was at 11 a.m. Eastern time, so that's 10 o'clock, that they were trying to get all the Jews of the world to pray for peace and the coming of the Messiah. So the Jews of the world are praying right now for the coming of the Messiah. So it helps me wonderful to see the Jewish perspective that they are looking today for the coming of the Messiah. From our perspective, we're saying we're looking for his return. Okay? Now then, why are they looking for that? Turn to the last book of the Old Testament, the last page of the Old Testament. The last page of the Old Testament, the last verses. Malachi 4, 5. Malachi 4, 5. This all ties together. God says, see, I will send you the prophet Elijah before that great and dreadful day of the Lord comes. There's the day of the Lord. He's still telling them, this was about 400 BC, so 400 years before Christ, God is still telling them to look for the day of the Lord. Okay? So all of the other instances that are talked about can't be the final day of the Lord. They may have been examples of, precursors of the final day of the Lord, but if he's still telling the Jews in 400 BC that the day of the Lord is still to come, then that must mean that it's still out here somewhere. And we'll see it through the New Testament also. Now then, so what is the preparation? What is the sign for the Jews that the day of the Lord is near? The coming of Elijah. Okay? We could get into all of the interesting correlations between John the Baptist and Elijah and the coming of John the Baptist and his paving the way for the Messiah, Jesus Christ. We believe that that has been fulfilled. The Jews, for 3,500 years, have set a place for Elijah at their Passover dinners. For 3,500 years, they have a cup for Elijah. During the Passover celebration, a child in the Jewish family will go to the front door and open the front door to see if Elijah is coming. 3,500 years, folks, every single year they've been doing this based on this verse right here. Today, Jews all over the world are praying for the coming of the Messiah. So they are looking for Elijah because they know the day of the Lord is near when Elijah comes. That's why they're still looking. It's all here. It's all right here in front of us. All right. So we have this description of the day of the Lord. It's full of wrath. It's full of anger. It's full of fire. It's full of punishment. It's judgment on the evil. It is destruction. It is not going to be a good day. And the only reason I said that it's not going to be is because so far the world has not been destroyed. And that final judgment hasn't happened. So therefore, I believe the day of the Lord is still to come. Are the examples in the Old Testament, are they examples of the day of the Lord? Are they decision days for different cultures, different peoples, for Israel at different times? I think that that was what God is saying. You need to turn now, come back to me, or face future punishment. So that was a decision day for them. In a manner, it was a day of the Lord for them, but it's not the final day of the Lord, or he wouldn't still be talking about it. So let's see if this keeps picking up here. So Joel 2, turn back to Joel. Here's some more information about what this day is looking like and what it will look like, because we're going to be right back into evidently this real invasion of locusts. Okay? Joel 2, 1. Here it is again. Blow the trumpet. Keep that in mind because trumpet's going to be important still. Blow the trumpet in Zion. Sound the alarm on my holy hill, the temple mount, my holy hill. Let all who live in the land tremble, for the day of the Lord is coming. It is close at hand. All right. Again, if this is a vision for the Israelites, and Joel is warning them in the middle of a locust plague, what he's saying is, you better make your decision now. You know, now's the time to decide, because you see all this destruction going on around you. Is that the final day of the Lord? No, I don't think it was. For them, some of them, it probably was their final day. Okay? It was a day of decision. It is close at hand, and here it is again. Similarities, a day of darkness and gloom, a day of clouds and blackness. Okay, so there's something going on in the heavens. Like dawn spreading across the mountains, a large and mighty army comes, such as never was of old, nor ever will be in ages to come. This description of this plague of locusts, this swarm, is like the dawn rising and spreading over the whole country. What will it still look like? Before them, fire devours. Behind them, a flame blazes. Before them, the land is like the Garden of Eden. Behind them, a desert waste. Nothing escapes them. Nothing escapes this swarm of locusts. They're devouring everything in its path, leaving fire in its wake. They have the appearance of horses. They gallop like cavalry. With a noise like that of chariots, they leap over the mountaintops like a crackling fire, consuming stubble, like a mighty army drawn up for battle. Okay, so remember that description out of Revelation about that army? And it's a lot of similarities with it. It is like an army who has armor on and is advancing pointedly to destroy everything in its path. At the sight of them, nations are in anguish. Okay, so here we are again. It's not just the nation of Israel who needs to be worried. Because he's saying nations. There's other people who need to be worried about this. Every face turns pale. They charge like warriors. They scale walls like soldiers. They all march in line, not swerving from their course. They do not jostle each other. Each marches straight ahead. They plunge through defenses without breaking ranks. They rush upon the city. They run along the wall. They climb into the houses like thieves. They enter through the window. There's the thieves, you know, that keeps popping up, all of these things. Peter says it will come like a thief. It's going to happen again. Before them, the earth shakes and the sky trembles. We've seen that before. And the sun and moon are darkened and the sun no longer shines. There it is again. All these similarities. The Lord thunders at the head of his army. His forces are beyond number and mighty are those who obey his command. The day of the Lord is great. It is dreadful. Who can endure it? Who can endure the coming day of the Lord? Who can stand against something like this? This focused, intent army that is coming to wipe out every single thing in its path, and darkness and clouds and gloom, a day of danger, a day of judgment. Who can endure this? Who can possibly stand against it? He says here that nothing's going to escape. Nothing will escape. Turn over to 1 Thessalonians. See if there's any indication here. 1 Thessalonians. 1 Thessalonians 5. Verse 1. So if you get to Hebrews, back up just a few pages. Okay? So 1 Thessalonians 5, 1. Now, brothers, about times and dates, we do not need to write you, for you know very well that the day of the Lord will come how? Oh, there it is again. Like a thief in the night. All right, so here it is again. The day of the Lord coming like a thief in the night. While people are saying peace and safety, destruction will come on them suddenly as labor pains on a pregnant woman, and what? They will not escape. Joel says, there's not anybody going to be escaping from this. All the other authors are saying it's going to happen like a thief. They're like thieves coming in. You're unprepared. They come in and take everything. And it's going to be a day of destruction, and nothing's going to escape. Man, so is there a way out? There's got to be a way out of this mess. Okay? He continues to talk about this army that penetrates how, like thieves, Joel says, verse 7 through 9. It's this focused-minded, determined march in an army that cannot be stopped. And then there's two more instances of the day of the Lord that I want you to look at. Back in Joel, it talks about it is close at hand in chapter 2. A day of darkness and gloom, a day of clouds and blackness, okay? And then there's that trumpet that's sounding. And then verse 11, he says, the day of the Lord is great, it is dreadful, who can endure it? All right? All right, so get those in your mind. We've got a few more minutes. Matthew 24. Okay, so he's talking about the earth shaking, the sky trembling, the sun and moon darkened, stars no longer shine. All of these things going on? Well, does Jesus himself talk about this? Yes, he does. He tells the disciples what to look for in the end times with the returning of himself, the Messiah. In Matthew 24, 29, he says, immediately after the distress of those days, what happens? The sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from the sky and the heavenly bodies will be shaken. There it is again. Jesus says in his time, in first century, it is still to come. It is still to come. So we know that the actual day of the Lord has not happened yet. All right? Now, it's also interesting is, Jesus says, and when the Son of Man comes, what will he do? In verse 31, he will send his angels with what? There's that trumpet again. There's that trumpet that's going to blow. Everything's going to go dark, and then something powerful is going to happen. Isaiah 34. So go all the way back to Isaiah. Isaiah 34, verse 4. Isaiah says that all the stars of the heavens will be dissolved and the sky rolled up like a scroll. All the starry host will fall like withered leaves from the vine, like shriveled figs from the fig tree. So something powerful happens in the heavens at this moment. All right, is that reflected later? Yes, turn to Revelation 6, all the way to the back. All the way back to Revelation 6. Now then, John spends his vision talking about three separate chain of events that is set off in the seven-year period that we know as the 7 years of Daniel, the tribulation period. Each of these events is symbolized by the opening of seven seals, then the blowing of seven what? Well, there's those trumpets again. They just keep popping up. And then there are seven bowls of God's wrath. Okay, so with each seal that's open, with each trumpet that's blown, with each bowl that is poured out, something happens. All right, so in Revelation 6, he's describing these seals that are opened. With each seal, something happens. In Revelation 6:12, he says, at the sixth seal, it says, there was a great earthquake, so it goes back to the earth trembling. The sun did what? Turned black like sackcloth, made of goat hair. The whole moon turned blood red, and the stars in the sky fell to the earth as late figs drop from a fig tree. That sounds exactly like what Isaiah was talking about. When shaken by a strong wind, the sky receded like a scroll, rolling up, and every mountain and island was removed from its place. Same thing. There's a time coming where the heavens and the earth are going to just be turned upside down, inside out. Great darkness, gloom, blackness, destruction are going to happen. And it follows all the way through. Turn to Revelation 8, 5. And this is at the seventh seal. 8:5, it says, then the angel took the censer, filled it with fire from the altar, and hurled it on the earth, and there came peals of thunder, rumblings, flashes of lightning, and an earthquake. All right? So there's similarities all the way through the Bible about the day of the Lord. Something powerful happening at a future date when God comes in to judge the nations and take out his wrath against all sin and punish the evil that is on the earth. It never changes all the way through the Bible, folks. That's what I want you to see, that all of this fits together perfectly. It is a perfect description, and the Bible being written over 1,500 years had to be done by an outside author who sees across time. No other way could it be coordinated like this. You can't do it. All right? So what I'm saying is, this Bible is the Word of God. It is alive. It's applicable today because we are still looking for this chain of events to begin. And this day of the Lord that's coming, it is coming. It hasn't happened yet. We are still looking toward that time. The Jews are praying for their Messiah to come. The Muslims are praying for their Messiah to come. We're praying for our Messiah to return. Yeah? He's coming to take us home. Now then, the last thing I want you to think about is, it says in Joel, who can endure the day of the Lord? In fact, Amos 5:18, he says, why are you looking forward to this day of the Lord? He said, how can you look forward to something like this? That's what Amos says in Amos 5:18. So who can endure it? Who can stand in the day of the Lord? And Amos says, why are you looking forward to this day? It's going to be horrible. Can we look forward to that day? And how do we do it? So next week we'll find out how. I know, you got to wait a whole week. Any questions or comments? Thank you all so much for being here. And I hope, you know, as you see all this lined up, man, I hope it just fires you up because it is incredible to see. It's just so much fun to see what God has put in here to sustain us for generations and generations and to what it is that we're looking forward to. So, all right, let's have a prayer. Our dearest Lord, we thank you for your word and what it means for us today. Give us the wisdom every single time we read this and see what's going on in the world around us. Give us the wisdom to discern what you have for us, the message that you're sending. God, if all of this drought and wildfire and upheaval in the United States is your warning for our nation to turn around, help us to see that. Help us to turn our lives around, each individually as well as collectively in the body of Christ to turn around. And God, I pray for this nation to turn around. We have left you. We have left you in the lurches. We have pushed you away so much, God, that we have not allowed you to be a part of any of our processes in our government, and it's sad to see. Help us to turn it around in the ways that you want us to do that. Our Almighty God, we thank you for your Son, Jesus Christ. In his name, amen. Thanks for being here.